welcome to No Filter. We're recording this on, what is this, Thursday, February 7th. It is the NBA trade deadline day. And I'll start by asking Bob and Denny, my co-hosts, Bob Page and Denny McClain. The Pistons have done two very minor, non-game-changing trades. And any thoughts about the continuing pathetic nature of this franchise that seems to do everything possible to make itself a complete non-entity? And they're obviously, they've given up on the playoffs. They've made a couple little moves. Stanley Johnson for Tom Maker, who seems to be a project, although he was a number 10 draft pick for Milwaukee in 2016.
He's not even in the rotation. And how many minutes is he going to get in Detroit with a big kid at center? And, you know, that I don't understand that. And they traded a really good player. Oh, I don't think we can re-sign him. The Pistons' quote from the organization was, well, you know, we're not going to go anywhere with him. They traded Reggie Bullock, a really good player, you know, and they got back a guy who, again, isn't even playing for Milwaukee. He's 7 feet tall. This has already got a really good guy in the middle who's 7 feet tall. And they got a good backup as well.
They traded Stanley Johnson for Tom Maker, and they traded Bullock for a second round pick and futures.
And a kid, this European guard from the Ukraine, who supposedly is the LeBron James of the Ukraine, he's not in the Lakers rotation either. So I just don't really, you know, understand some of what they're thinking of right now. I just really don't.
You know what they're doing? They're doing something very popular in Detroit. Shedding salary and refusing to pay good players.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Gores has stated categorically that they are not tanking. And if this isn't tanking, nothing is. I mean, this is like a submarine going down. They've got two holes on each side already. I mean, where do you go with something like this? And you know what? We've been bad for a long time. It's been forever since this organization has been substantive enough to play competitively. When does it end?
You know, we just saw the Patriots with the same owner and the same coach and the same quarterback for the last 17 years. The Pistons have, who's the general manager? I don't know, who was the general manager before the last general manager? You trade coaches, you make a trade for Blake Griffin from the last coach. And by the way, as Bob and I both agree, I thought Stan Van Gundy was one of the smartest NBA guys I ever saw. And he comes to this organization and turns into a, you know, very ineffective to be
he
nice.
He didn't deserve anything. And I like Stan, and I've known him a long time. He did not deserve to be given the keys to the Pistons franchise, which essentially he was. You're talking about GMs. Van Gundy was a guy who ran this club for all those years. And now they got a former NBA coach of the year. And, you know, he does not seem to be doing much of anything at all. I don't know where these guys are going. I don't know how involved Tom Gores is. I don't know how much he knows about basketball. But, right now, if you look at the attendance figures for the Pistons downtown at the new Little Caesars Arena, it's brutal.
Terrible.
It's been bad.
Just terrible.
So I go to a game. The first game I go to, this is a little sidebar here along the lines of what you're saying. And I'm sitting there to see him play the Knicks. And I sit down with it, and for the opening tip, there's maybe 800 people in the arena. And go, this is really scary. They tell me they're all in the clubs. I sure hope they come out of the clubs because this is like I can hear guys talking to each other and whispering to each other. The acoustics are great in there, by the way. And they go up and down the court the first two or three times, and the music doesn't shut off. And I say to the guy next to me, wait a minute. I said, I've been watching the NBA my entire life. I've traveled with this team for 7 years from 05 through 11, and when they bring the ball in, the music stops. But they're keeping the music on. And so a friend of mine who works for the organization who got me my tickets that night comes by. I go, what's going on here? There's a mistake. They're not shutting the music off. You can't have the music on with a guy. She says, well, when there's nobody in the arena, they keep the music on so it seems like there's something going on. And I said, well, you know, when the visitors have the ball, there's only two or three things they can play. This is crazy.
Is it all about money?
That's not the best Knicks Pistons story which I'll tell you when Denny's done talking.
Go ahead, Denny. Let me just throw two things. Normally, when you got problems like this and you're not consistent, it's either money or you don't have the people in place that can do the job. So which one is it? I mean, you guys are supposed to be the experts here. Tell me all about the NBA and tell me why they can't win.
If you don't like Blake Griffin, you don't like basketball.
I love Blake Griffin.
Drummond is an amazing force.
Great player.
I like Ish Smith. I like a lot of the guys that the Pistons have. But what I was referring to was not those amazing games that they actually played down at Joe Louis in the playoffs, Isaiah versus Bernard King years ago.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the night that I was sitting courtside at the Pontiac Silverdome, and Eli, you might have been there with me, and one of the greatest characters in the history of Detroit sports, Leon the Barber. Mm-hmm. 2,000 people rattling around as always, Pistons versus the Knicks on a miserable winter night, and Leon's stomping around. He's running up and down behind us at the press table. Look at all them! Look at all them! Look at all them! And we'll say, Leon, what's he talking about? During the first quarter, they bring a little press release around, put it in front of us. The first game in NBA history played by two teams of all black rosters. I've never forgotten that. Leon the Barber stomping up and down behind the press table.
He should have been happy with that.
I don't know how he felt about it, but I know he felt very strongly about the issue.
Well, if you want to go back to that, frankly, it was at least a little charming back then. We would all be wearing our winter coats because there weren't enough people. They didn't realize that in an 80,000-foot seat stadium that you count on the human bodies to provide some of the heat. So there was
they thought the curtain would matter. So
they couldn't properly heat the arena, and players and people can see their breath. And there's 2,000 people in an 80,000 seat arena.
Unbelievable.
The only thing worse than that,
Eli, was when I finished doing my interviews after the game. Now everybody's gone. Players are. I'm walking out to my car across that Pontiac Silverdome parking lot. It's 3 degrees, and the most amazing winter wind you've ever experienced is in your face. My heavens, talk about paying your dues.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
There's the reason that Dwayne Casey can't succeed as the Piston coach is because the management and the leadership has put them in this position. It goes back to Joe Dumars. He goes from genius to jerk overnight. Where he signs Darko Milicic and the disastrous, he had some bad luck, the disastrous signing of Allen Iverson put this franchise in a very low position. And unless you get a genius who really sees how things fit together, a Belichick, an owner, or maybe a great coach that's given the reins and gets it done, but it's just bad leadership. So you can look at this and that, and maybe why. Well, it's a series of bad managers over a period of time that puts the team in this position. An owner who's clueless, who lives in L.A., and now he is essentially given up. And does he really care? I'm sure he cares, but he's made $650 million in this franchise by only doing a bad job.
So is it money or is it the lack of talent?
Lack of talent in the front office.
I don't see a big lack of talent on this team.
You don't.
You're talking about Blake Griffin.
Wait a minute, Bob. You've only got one Blake Griffin. He can't carry the club every night. They're 22 and 29. They're 22 and 29. How good are they?
I understand that. And you are what your record says you are.
That's
now,
exactly right.
Contrast that to the Golden State Warriors. Look at what they've done and how they keep this group together. It was interesting, though, to see Kevin Durant go off on the media. Stop asking me about free agency. This is a guy who never should have joined that team. He's taken minutes and quality play away from the superstars who were already there. They didn't need him. He comes in. Draymond Green and he get into a huge fight early this year because Draymond sees Durant for what he is. He is a mercenary looking for the next big deal. And he's going to go to New York, and he's going to play with the Knicks. And he doesn't like it when people keep bringing this up. Then, son, shut up and say, I love this team. I love living in the Bay Area. I want to be here. They can give me a max contract. I'm going to be making $20 million a year. Shut up, Durant.
Do you think that's an exclusive position he's got? Professional sports is full of guys who want to go play with a winner. Castellanos has already said to us sometime during this winter, I don't want to be here anymore. I want out of here. I want to be traded to a club that'll win. He's already said that.
it's not just that, Denny. They've treated Nick Castellanos with an astounding lack of respect. When you are rebuilding a franchise,
lack of respect,
and you're taking kids from the minor leagues.
He walked right into this door.
Trying to create major league players. That's what you do if you get a Nick Castellanos, and then you say, "This is what we're trying to do. We're trying to produce a Nick Castellanos, and nothing but trade rumors all the time. Tigers trying to get rid of him. They picked up the guy from the Cubs, Jaime Candelario." And they had to move Nick off of third base, where he was beginning to adjust, for a guy who's mediocre defensively and a mediocre hitter. They moved Nick to right field, deliberately embarrassing him. He can't play right field.
Wait a second. Before you finish the story, I was in Pennsylvania with Nick and L. Mr. Kaline for about three or four days. And yeah. Al was trying to work with him to learn how to catch a fly ball, to circle the ball, catch the ball, and throw the ball, and whatever else. And nobody can play right field as good as Del Kaline probably could. But the bottom line is, all Al said after 3 or 4 days, the kid can't catch a fly ball. The kid doesn't know what to do. He doesn't remember to do this before he does that. So they always thought he could possibly play third base. He couldn't play third base either. He didn't move well. Let me finish. He always moved late on the ball. He didn't have one of those, you know, Brooks Robinson's first steps, the first two steps. So he's always behind the ball. So what do you do? You know, if he can't find a position, you DH him for the rest of his next 20 years and hope that he becomes a 300 hitter for the rest of his life, because he can hit. But I suspect with everything that's going on, he's going to wind up in the National League anyway.
And now he hasn't played third base for a few years, which sets him back. But Bob and I were sitting at a Tiger game, three, four years ago? I lose track of time. And Castellanos was a rookie or maybe second year, and the ball goes right through his legs at third base. And that's when you made the comment about that he's no Brooks Robinson. I was kind of defending him as being young. And then we asked a young lady sitting next to us with a Tiger jersey on if she ever heard of Brooks Robinson. And she said no. And we all felt very old very quickly. But, you know, it's hard.
She should have felt very stupid very quickly, too.
There are some guys that can play, like Mickey Stanley could play shortstop and he could play center field. There are some great fielders that can play anywhere. But you take a guy who wasn't a great fielder to start with, then you put him in a position that he's uncomfortable with. And I agree with you. Making him a right fielder made no sense. Now, when Kirk Gibson came up, Al Kaline also tried to make him a right fielder. They worked tirelessly week after week, and it was a very difficult process. He had to teach Gibby how to throw, and eventually he became kind of an average outfielder. But you can't just assume you throw a guy out there. Some can and some can't.
Danny, you made a comment about Castellanos possibly playing in the National League. Well, guess what? Under these proposed baseball rules, the new ones they're talking about, one of them is that the National League will finally go to a designated hitter for next season.
Yeah.
So if they do, it would make sense that Nick could go to the National League and DH for somebody.
And listen, that also opens up the market for an awful lot of older guys in the National League that wind up being all of a sudden DHs. And you know what? Maybe I'm wrong, but the guys that are holding out for all the money this year, Machado and Harper, if in fact that DH rule comes into effect in the National League, that's going to take their value down a little bit, because now you're going to be able to hang on to a 35-year-old guy, 38-year-old guy who can still hit and still produce. These guys' value may go from, listen to this, it may go from $300 million a year to only $200 million, you know, over a period of time. So,
poor babies got to survive on $200 million. As you know, as everybody knows, the National League is the only professional league at any level of baseball that does not use the DH. Isn't it about time? When I was a boy growing up in Detroit, I used to watch Hank Aguirre come up to the plate and just flail away like an old woman en route to a career batting average.
He had a great swing, though. I'm telling you, he had a great swing.
I said to my dad, Dad, how come pitchers hit? This is ridiculous. And they finally went to it, and the National League is a remaining holdout.
Al used to say, he said, here's the guy for a pitcher that's got the greatest swing I've ever seen, and he never, ever makes contact. Well, half of his problem was he would always take two strikes. And Al would say, or one of the guys on the bench would say, well, why do you always take two strikes? I'm a better hitter with two strikes.
I remember we were sitting down by the bullpen in those days at Tiger Stadium in Briggs Stadium when they had the relief pitcher sitting out right next to you. It was really cool. You could talk to the guys. They're sitting on the bench. And Phil Regan was up one time, and he really teed into one. And he hit a long drive right in front of us to left field, and the outfielder went back, and he caught it very easily on the warning track. But I've never forgotten Phil Regan actually hitting a ball to the warning track. That's how bad it was. So I hope the National League does use the DH.
Well, let's get to the changes that baseball's attempting to make.
All right, sure.
I'm going to start at the top with the ones that would affect if I played. They want to move the pitcher's mound back.
No, they don't. They want to lower the mound.
They want to lower the pitcher's mound.
They want to either move the pitcher's mound back or lower the pitcher.
You know, guys,
lower it.
You want me to read it to you? I've got the minutes.
60 feet, 6 inches always will be. That's ridiculous.
Yes, it is. Eli's right about that.
At 9:45 yesterday, on a potential changes to be discussed, chief among them is that the league and MLBPA are discussing the formation of a joint committee to implement all these new rules. One of the rules is going to be either moving the pitcher's mound back or lowering the mound again.
Well, you're reading it.
Lowering
Somebody
the
may
mound
write
again.
It.
Now, listen, bottom line is, hey, as far as if they move that mound back, they screwed at the pitchers in 1968 when they took that mound down 6 inches. That was terrible. Caused a lot of arm trouble with a lot of guys who were good pitchers. Out of the 25 top pitchers at the end of the 68 season, 21 were out of the game by 1974.
I didn't know that. Now, I had intended to ask you about this, though. The 68, the year of the pitcher, Bob Gibson with his 1.12 ERA. Denny McClain goes 31-6 with, what, like a 1.96 ERA. Did you feel that helped you greatly that year? As you guys talk about this, that do you feel that gave you an unfair advantage over hitters that year in 68?
The mound?
Yeah.
No, the mound's been like that for 100 years before us.
They changed it in 1969. It was 68.
It went
was
down.
The year of the pitcher, and they lowered the mound in 69.
6 inches, right?
Right. Yeah, no, 6 inches. Yeah, they went down 6 inches.
Well, and, so I'm asking, was that a big difference to you?
Well, we didn't even know it until they announced it. They didn't call any players in to make the announcement. This was done by the commissioner with his goofies running around the table, putting their arms up for a yes. They were looking for, obviously, touchdowns versus 1-0 and 2-1 games. But, yes, it did not help. It didn't help at all because all it really did not – and I'll give you the perfect example. In 1968, I struck out 280 guys. In 1969, with the mound down 6 inches, I struck out 180. The velocity wasn't there. Yet, on the other hand, I set a record with the Tigers that year by having 9 shutouts in the year 1969, which is still a record. But the bottom line was I don't know how the shutouts occurred. I have no idea. But the bottom line simply was it wasn't that bad of a season. I mean, won another Cy Young, won 24 ball
You were 24-9, yeah.
Right.
Well, how do you feel about the talk now then about them lowering the pitching mound?
I don't like it at all. It's going to cause more damage. You're going to have – I'll tell you one thing you will have. You'll have a whole lot of these phony strikeout guys that are averaging, 32 strikeouts every time they go out there. They pitch 2 games in a row of 9 innings, and if they get 8 in one game and 7 in the other, now they're averaging 15 strikeouts a game in 9 innings. I mean, all this phony numbers that they've come up with, the pitchers are crazy. And the relief pitchers.
From now on, every relief pitcher must face at least 3 hitters. You can't have a situational left-hander anymore to pitch to one guy. That's under the proposed rules.
But that's changing the game. That's totally changing the game. If you can't put a left-handed pitcher on a left-handed hitter, boy, I'm going to tell you something. It's
You can, but he's got to face 2 more guys.
He's got to face the other guys. And think about this. Gates Brown, who hated, and so did everybody else, if you were a left-handed hitter, hated to pitch against a guy named Sam McDowell, who literally threw the ball harder than anybody.
He kept you loose, didn't he?
number one, threw the ball harder than any of us had seen. And number two, he was an alcoholic. So one night we're playing a doubleheader in Cleveland, and in that ballpark with that big stadium, it got dark pretty early, even with the lights on. And we were losing 8 or 9 to nothing in the third or fourth inning that night. Charlie Dressen was the manager. And Charlie Dressen said, I don't want to use a right-handed hitter right now. In case we score a couple of runs, I want to save all my right-handed hitters. Gates, get a bat. Gates said, what the hell are you mad at me for? He said, What did I do? I don't want to hit against him. He's, Leo, it's 6 o'clock in the evening. This guy's drunk already. You cannot throw me out there. So
I wonder if Gates ever faced Bob Veal, because Veal was in that category too.
Oh yeah, but
and if you want to talk about drunken pitchers, Ryan Duren, you better believe it.
Yeah, we're getting too far back now. All of our listeners have already
let them learn something.
So anyway, Gates goes up to hit. He takes the first two pitches, fastballs right down the middle. All he wants to do is take another fastball because he's scared to death up there. He thinks he's peeing in his pants, for God's sakes. That's how scared he is. It's dark. It's 6:30 at night. Sam goes ahead, and typically Sam, a lot like Lolich, would get a guy 0-2 and then screw around a little bit. Sam threw him a hanging curveball. Gates hit the ball off the right field wall. Now he's running like hell, going into second base, slides on his chest in the second base.
I never saw Gates Brown run like hell.
Oh, yeah. He can listen. Gates was one of the fastest guys in the ball club. He gets a second.
Oh,
really? Yeah. Absolutely. He could fly.
What?
He could fly.
I don't remember that.
Listen,
what are you talking about?
Gates could fly, could go from first to third as well as anybody you've ever seen. So Gates slides into second base. He gets up, starts to brush himself off, and the second base umpire was Ed Hurley. And Ed Hurley said to him, "You're bleeding. You're bleeding. You're bleeding. Are you okay?" He said, "No, don't say anything. Don't say anything. I got two hot dogs in there."
That's the ketchup. Anyway.
Charlie Dressen, the manager, fined him $150. So we didn't have hot dogs for about 2 weeks. True story.
All right. Gates has told that story too many, many times. I've heard it's a great story.
All right,
story.
So let's move on with some of this other stuff.
No. First of all, a lot of these proposed rules changes are brought out to just create conversation, to create talk. None of them can happen without the Players Association agreeing. Like Denny said, when they lowered the mound, they didn't have to ask the Players Association then. They do now. And so there's the talk of if they really, I did not read anything about them moving the mound back.
King Asabi,
just like they're
going to
make
wrong
the bases 93 feet.
You're wrong about it. There's one other rule that the commissioner can do on his own without the Players Association. He can affect the 20-second clock any time he wants.
That's absurd.
Absolutely absurd. But he can affect it any time he wants. They talk about making the games quicker. Do any of these rules make the game quicker? Hell no, they don't make the game quicker.
And the thing about what Eli just said about the Players Association, what they do when, in fact, they do negotiate these things is they have to do a quid pro quo. The Players Association has to get something back. So according to these rules changes, what they're getting back is they're going to add a 26th player to the major league roster, and that has to, and every team has to carry at least 12 pitchers. Now, think about that. If you're going to make a relief pitcher pitch to three guys, why would you add a 12th pitcher? Because you're going to need fewer pitchers if he has to stay in for three to face at least three batters.
Good point. They also said as part of that was going to cut back in September from 40 players to 28.
Yeah, that won't work.
I don't think fans really care about that anyway. They're also going – this was kind of interesting, the anti-tanking rule. If you lose more than 90 games in consecutive seasons, you can face draft penalties.
Yeah. Right.
And they also small market teams can get more picks. I think I'd be okay with that, but
and if you win, you're rewarded with more picks. There are draft rewards for you if you win. I mean, I don't know how this is going to shake out, but that's what they're saying anyway.
Well, we discussed the Piston team already. That nobody shows up to see for good reason. We have the Tigers where nobody showed up last year because there was nothing really worth seeing, and it's interesting in that they still try and make you believe that there's more attendance that there is. And I remember for years at the Palace, they had this consecutive sellout streak, and I was working for the team then, and we'd look around and say, it's not sold out. How can you continue to say it's the 273rd consecutive sellout? Did they give the other tickets away? Is there a technicality? So I don't know why they all have
distributed. It's tickets distributed.
Well, and they also give stuff away. They want to create the illusion that there's big attendance, not that, and you think, well, what's the reason for that? What does it really matter? Why not let the attendance be the attendance? One reason is it's for sponsors and selling things. And last year for one of my clients, I bought spots on the Tiger scoreboard with a certain assumption that so many people would show up at the game. And I realized they weren't showing up. People weren't seeing it. So they try and create the sense that there's a lot of people coming that may not be there. And that's to sell more sponsorship. So, and the Red Wings also claim to be selling out, and they're not. I think they're getting about 2/3 though. And so, you know, and they won't even comment on it. I guess Detroit, is it Detroit Deadline or Deadline Detroit?
Deadline Detroit. I saw that where they went to Tom Wilson, and even Tom Wilson finally said, look, I really can't talk to you about this. I know I promised, but I got to take it upstairs. I will say this though, and I made this comment a few shows ago, that the Wings are a lot better than they look to some people and that their record looks right now. Yeah. They have some really good young players. They got more kids down in Grand Rapids. They got kids in the juniors. I mean, I think the Wings have a bright future. I'm not sure I can say that about the Tigers or the Lions or the Pistons.
I agree. And what's the difference? Kenny Holland has been in place for a long time.
Forever.
Has a great sense of the arc of history with that team. And he is kind of rebuilding on the fly and actually doing it.
Yeah, I think he is too. But you have to remember this, that everybody is saying, and I believe that it to be true, Kenny Holland is the new general manager of the NHL expansion franchise in Seattle. Next year, Stevie Yzerman takes over as the Wings general manager. And there's a guy who built Tampa up from nothing and discovered all this great talent and made the Lightning one of the top teams in the National Hockey League. So we'll see how this shakes out too. I wish Kenny well. I think he's great.
Yeah, you brought up the Tigers as far as the organization itself. There is no theme with the Tigers. There was a short time there with all they were looking for were home runs. One guy after another would hit a home run. But now they don't even have any, they don't have enough people to make a theme right now. You don't know if you're getting a bunch of singles. Hell, you hope they get on base. I mean, you certainly have got problems in your pitching staff, and that's going to stay there a long, long time. You just don't get lucky by signing pitchers.
They do have their farm system. Denny saw, I think ESPN has their farm system at 18th. I just read Bleacher Report has them ranked 11th. And of their top 10 prospects, Matt Manning, Casey Mize, Franklin Perez, Alex Vado, Bo Burrows, Kyle Funkhauser, all right-handed pitchers. They got a lot of right-handed pitchers coming up. But still, how many years it will be and what? So here's, okay.
And if these kids pan out, by the way.
Right.
Sir, what would you say? What?
And if these kids pan out.
Exactly. Now, Comerica Park could sell out every game. The Pistons could sell out every game. And so could the Wings if the prices matched. I think there's a big bubble in sports. And just like the tickets for the Wings at the Joe Louis Arena last year were 92 to 120 for lower bowl. A lot of money to spend for a regular season game. Now it's between 100 and 300 at Little Caesars Arena. Not to get too political here, but there is a great issue in the world and in America with income inequality. The top 5%, maybe 10% can afford this. The rest of the world can't. It's an absurd concept that I can spend for a family of four $1,000 to go see a regular season game. It's nonsensical. And yet they can't change the prices. But if you didn't like hotel rooms and said, hey, we got a light night and give you a room for $50, you could sell the place out.
You remember,
but for some reason it's intractable. And so they go with fewer people, a lousy looking product, an unexciting arena because the tickets are too damn expensive to match the quality of the product.
$40 to park. You want to go to the Olympia room down at the new arena for a Wings game? What's it going to cost you to take your wife to dinner? A couple of drinks. If you want to get a hot dog in the stands or a beer, what's that going to cost you? So the ticket price is only part of the outrage. Right. It's the concession. But what are they supposed to do when players are making this much money?
Listen, 10, 15 years ago, it used to cost, for good seats, a couple of meals, four people to a ball game, it used to cost, they say, $250 a ball game. I don't think that's unreasonable. I think $250 may have been close to the real number. Today, it's $325, $330. I read it last week sometime. I mean, it's outrageous if you want really good seats, or if you get lucky and you want to buy a suite one night. I mean, you really want to find out how expensive it can get? That go ahead and buy a suite and buy the shrimp. You'll find out a shrimp at a ballpark costs you about $8 a piece.
In fairness, if you watch the games. For instance, Kenny and Mickey on the Wings broadcast are always promoting some ridiculous deal where you can buy tickets for $20 or $25 and get some hot dogs for free or whatever they do. So I think the team certainly recognize this. But again, what's the answer when guys are making $10, $20, $30 million a year?
And nobody's running into any of these venues to buy a hot dog. Yes.
They're What's eating that? Before they get there.
One person is jumping into the venue to buy a hot dog. They're not there to watch the hot dog burn or watch the hot dog be consumed. They're there to watch a sporting event, period.
And $11 for a beer. It's just it's whatever.
Boy, God forbid you ever say you want to buy a round.
Right. You know, okay. Speaking of money, we talked about Durant a little while ago, and I was thinking about in the whole post Super Bowl discussion about, you know, attendance and money and $5.25 million for a spot and everything. I said, you know, in terms of the whole Brady thing, I looked it up. He has sacrificed potentially $60 million in salary. So I thought about this when you mentioned Durant just going for the big contract, and you really say, how much is enough? Really, exactly. How much is enough? It becomes
a competitive
thing.
In society at large, how much is enough? These corporate CEOs making $100, $200 million a year, how much is enough?
It's income inequality. It could be the biggest problem in America that at least half of us don't want to talk about. But Brady, he takes extensions, he restructures up to $60 million. It was estimated he has sacrificed so they could make room for Randy Moss in 2007. They signed key free agents.
Sacrifice $60 million.
What's the amount of money he could have made? He could have saved.
$60 million.
I'm not giving up any money to help this team, but to help the team,
Stupid to leave that organization with the best coach in the world in a system that he understands and it's authored part of that system.
I would think
so. He'd be crazy to go even think about going anywhere else. I don't care how much money they offered him.
Tell that to Kevin Durant. Tell that to Kevin Durant.
Well, yeah. Two kind of personalities. Tom Brady wants to win, and more win, and he wants to stay consistent. So he stayed with the organization all of his life. The other guy, like you said, he's a gunslinger. He wants to go wherever he can at a chance of winning the championship and or more money. Because I think Kevin, and they're all in it for the money. Don't misunderstand me. But I think Kevin, more than anybody else, is looking for bigger and bigger and bigger. I think he wants to be the highest paid player in the history of the NBA. I've always thought that about him.
I got no use for him then. I got no use.
I don't think anybody gets into sports or sports broadcasting to get rich. They get into it because they love it. They get into it because that's what they want to do. Bob and I didn't get into this to get rich. We may have gotten lucky and had some good jobs, but we got into it because it's what we love to do and we felt that we were good at it. I think it's the same with most athletes. They're incredibly dedicated. Yeah, Kevin Durant, now I'm not going to defend him if what you're saying is true, that he just wants the next big deal. I don't necessarily agree with that. A lot of times, and I'm guilty of that, I just couldn't stand being in one place too long. Some guys want to spend, Ernie Harrow was there for a million years. Yeah, guys on TV. Dave Llewellyn's been at Channel 7 since the mid-70s. Never want to leave. That's fine. It's a different personality.
Different personality.
And so I'm not going to knock Durant for wanting to move.
Champion. He's winning world championships, playing on what is arguably the greatest basketball team in the history of the game. So it's not about, I'm a little tired of this. I think I'll go someplace else. Why would you ever, like Brady in New England, why would you ever want to leave the Golden State Warriors?
Well, how do we know that he does? How do we fully know that he does?
He's made noises to that effect in the offseason, but he's definitely not going to sign. He wants to test the free agent waters. This is what's upset Draymond Green, because Draymond is a team guy first, as you both know. He's a team guy. And it's just very unbecoming, which led to Kevin Durant's blow up in front of reporters on Wednesday night.
I just don't trust none of y'all. Every time I say something, it's get twisted up and thrown out in so many different publications. I just want to play ball. I want to go to the gym and go home. That's all. Is that a problem? All right, then.
Grow up. Stop asking me about free agency. You're the guy who started it, Kevin. You're the guy who caused all this stuff.
I think team guys are team guys until the big money comes along. Then I think their team concept goes right out the window with most guys.
How much money's enough?
I mean, everybody's got a number. You and I both know that. Everybody's got a number. But these guys have a big number for a very long period of time. That's the big thing with these guys. They don't make $20 million one time in their life. They make $200, $300, $350 million.
It's ego. Absolutely. It's ego. It's ego
Absolutely.
To be the highest paid.
No
because
question
you know
about
you're never
it.
Going to spend all that money. Otherwise, right. It's just stupidity. After
Look at LeBron
point.
James now. He's producing television and movies. The money that he's made outside the game is now financing his movies and financing television sitcoms that he's now actually.
You're talking about LeBron James. Here's the guy who took less money to go home to Cleveland to help out his native Northeast
right.
Ohio
mm-hmm.
area.
Because
so
he felt
LeBron
so damn
James
bad about going to Miami. He was guilty. He felt guilty over what he did.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Well, and he did win.
I understand,
he did win eventually.
Piston fans had a lot of animus against LeBron James for good reason, because he beat them every year. But except for his saying, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach, and that overpublicized, it seemed like totally ego motivated exercise. He has lived and he has performed and conducted himself off the court in absolutely a perfect way. There's nothing, not to say perfect, but there's nothing to complain about.
Terrific.
He is a warrior. He's a team player. And he built a big school.
Yeah, it's been great. The only thing I have to complain about, as you know, he did not even attend day one of college, is his basic lack of knowledge about geography. It drove me crazy, and it still drives me crazy.
Geography?
People say, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach. Yeah, are you going to play volleyball in the sand over there next to the ocean? Last time I looked, it's just Miami Beach. We have, living down here, I can tell you, we have South Beach. We have Mid Beach.
But we all knew what he was talking
Miami,
about.
The Miami Heat do not play in South Beach.
But we all, knew what
they
he was talking
about. Downtown Miami.
Listen, that's where they hang out, makes a lot of trips. He makes, just like anybody else would, including yourself, we all make a lot of trips to South Beach when we're down in South Miami. Yes?
I don't. That's
don't tell me.
I live here, pal. I don't go down there at all anymore. I listened to WFAN in New York a number of years ago, and they got some update kit on, you know. And he's a young guy, wants to be in broadcasting, got a job, doing a nice job. And he's talking about somebody in Chicago. And he says, well, next season, there's a good chance he's going to take his talent right across the river to Gary, Indiana. I call the kid up, and I say, son, it's Bob Page. So, Bob, how are you? I said, have you ever actually been to Chicago? He says, well, no. I said, well, take a look at the map, okay? Just check your geography before you start talking about places with which you have no degree of familiarity.
Gary virtually touches Chicago. Anyway, take a quick break here. I got some more topics, but when it comes to your eyesight, the question is simple. Are you happy with glasses, contacts, and reading glasses? No, I know you're not. Or would you rather have 20/20 far vision, crisp, close vision with any of that ancient technology? How ancient? Ben Franklin wore glasses. Can't we do better than that? Of course we can. I'm talking about the Yaldo Eye Center. Every week, Detroiters put those ancient technologies in the trash, and they shake Dr. Yaldo's hand, thankful and excited about their new lifestyle. Down here in Florida, you go swimming and don't worry about your contacts or your glasses, especially for outdoors.
Wait a minute. You better tell people that you are down there in Florida instead of
stuff.
I guess Denny is in Detroit, and that you're playing golf every day, and you might never come back to Detroit again.
Are you playing golf every day?
Not every day. My back hurts.
His back hurts.
He's on the Republican conservative side of the state, staying with his wife's relatives, and he's playing golf every day.
Well,
Danny,
let me ask him a personal question. Are you wearing your diapers now on the golf course? Can you play 18 holes?
I'm actually taking today off.
Oh,
I'm
my God.
Today. I need to rest my back. But
when are you coming home?
LASIK back in 2000. From Dr. Yaldo. I wore those big glasses. You may have seen me on TV with them, and I was truly amazed. I saw better without my glasses than I ever did with them. I had no idea that would happen because glasses distort, they cloud. And then in 2017, because I have cataracts, I'm getting to that age, I got multifocal lens implants to replace the cataracts, and that is an amazing surgery. Now, it is so effective, now that you can see up close and read the fine print, that people 50-plus, before they even get cataracts, are going to this surgery so they never have to worry about reading glasses again. So answer to the question. You're tired of glasses and contacts, and you want to see great up close in the distance? Get a free evaluation from Michigan's most honored and experienced eye surgeon, Dr. Yaldo. Call 1-800-398-EYES, 1-800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Ran into Dave Wannstedt, was in the group. He was actually going to be in the group in front of me, and we snuck around him to go play ahead of him here at in Naples. And when he got off the course, I went up to him. I said, hey, Dave, you probably don't remember me, but I'd met him some years ago. And I said, I really enjoy your insightful commentary on the Big Ten Network. I said,
kissing his ass, huh?
Yeah, well, whatever. But, you know, he didn't blow me off. We talked for a while, and basically he came down to say the best thing that happened to Michigan is Urban Meyer leaving Ohio State. And I couldn't disagree with him on that. Now, Bob, you were making a point about Michigan recruiting in-state. There was an article in the Detroit News, and you seemed to feel that the fact that Michigan only got one of the top 15 means they had a poor recruiting class and state got five.
I didn't say that. I said, I don't know. I said, maybe they just like guys around the country better. Michigan recruits much more nationally than Michigan State does. But State got five of the top 15 players in the state of Michigan this year. And we, as we tape the show, by the way, it is National Signing Day. They got five of the top 15 players, and including the number one guy and the number three ranked guy in the state of Michigan. But that's only part of the malaise there. You look at the paper yesterday, and suddenly you see a headline, Chris Evans, no longer part of Michigan's program. This guy's going to be the starting running back this year. He said, what do you mean he's no longer part of the program? You see that one of their top assistant coaches suddenly gone, no longer part of the program. You see Greg Madison leaving Ann Arbor and going to where? Ohio State?
Yeah, where would all
– that's just opportunity, though. That's just opportunity.
Yeah, it is, but it is. There's just a lot of stuff going on with Michigan football right now.
Something's going on there.
Not good for its image.
You're absolutely right. Something's going on there. It's under the table. Whatever it might be, it's under the table. Nobody's popping out and telling everybody what it's about. But I believe it always gets down to the coach or the manager or the ownership. Obviously, we don't have ownership here, but I think the people are upset with the coach. I just don't think this coach has done a very good job. I'm sorry. And I like him a lot, by the way.
As I said to Eli and other people to whom I sent this email, the Detroit News every year, when they do this list of the top 15 high school players in Michigan, they ask every one of them some of the same questions. Why not Michigan? Why didn't you go there? Why didn't you go to Michigan State, as the case may be? And if you look at those responses, virtually half of those kids said, I just did not like the atmosphere at Michigan. I didn't feel the coaches were real. I thought they were playing games with me. One of their top recruits, a quarterback, well, maybe it wasn't one of their top recruits, but a quarterback just decommitted from Michigan earlier this week. You see at least four or five kids leaving the program every offseason. And then there's that big number that's always hanging over their heads, 62. And if they lose to Ohio State again this year in any way with a brand new coach and at Ann Arbor, Ohio State doesn't have to score 62 points this time. If they lose, I don't see Harbaugh continues.
I don't see how Harbaugh continues. I don't either. I think he's a pimple away from being asked to leave, go somewhere else.
I don't know about that. But, yeah, if a bad year. So I wrote some of the quotes down. You did a pretty good job just off the top of your head. Some of the quotes were love. The love wasn't real. These are from the recruits that didn't go there. I felt like the love wasn't real was said twice. Didn't like the vibe. The other one was some of the coaches are not genuine. Another one says it doesn't seem like fun. You know, it's funny. You don't expect to be loved. You expect to be respected. It reminds me of the old Monty Clark line. What was the word? It wasn't respect.
Which one? When he drafted Ken Fantetti and said, he's a deluxe hitter. Let me digress for a moment. So when Cameron and I, 100 years ago, were doing our TV show back in Detroit, I always did this imitation of Monty, you know? Yeah. And so I had Monty, who was a nice guy, nice enough to drive down before camp started in the summer and do our show, come on with us. So I'm walking around the studio, we're getting ready to step, and I'm doing my Monty imitation. He talked just like this. Now it's time to tape. Monty sits down between the two of us. Cameron asked Monty the first question. Monty responds, and both of us just started breaking up, laughing hysterically. And Monty's looking at us like, what's wrong with you guys? When I say something, what I said, we just broke up and started laughing hysterically.
Anyway.
So what did Monty say?
I don't know if the word was respect, but he said, players just want to be respected. And once you learn to fake that, you got it made.
Yeah, right.
So you know, so I could see these players saying, didn't like the vibe, et cetera. But they're not going to love you. It's a professional relationship. You don't have to love the people that work for you. You need to respect them. So they obviously Michigan can't fake the respect and all that stuff that people look for.
That's the point. They don't respect, apparently, a lot of the
Michigan coaching
staff. Now, you read that article, as you did, Eli. I don't know if you did, Denny. And you look at what the Michigan State kids are saying about why they chose Michigan State.
Right.
And it's the same vibe, the same thing you always hear, because it seems like family. Because D'Antonio and his staff have created an atmosphere that's comfortable, and it seems like family.
And let me just digress for a second. I had two granddaughters start out at Michigan. University of Michigan, after 1 year, and they were not athletes, they were just pure students. After 1 year, they both decided they were going to go to Michigan State because of the school itself. It was cold. There was a distance between the professors and anybody else they had to work with every day. And they went to Michigan State. 3.5 years later, they both graduated.
Did they like it better at Michigan State?
Oh, God, did they ever.
That's
all they talked about. Listen, they went from the blue to nothing but everything was green and more green. I mean, I got so I wanted to grab a lawnmower and start cutting all their clothes. I had so much green around my house.
Denny, what were their majors?
One was business, and the other is medicine.
The Stephen Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan is one of the greatest in the world.
That's what they say.
University of Michigan Medical School is one of the greatest in the world. Michigan, academically, is so far beyond Michigan State, except in a few majors, hotel and restaurant administration.
Communications.
Broadcasting, communications. Yeah. But I said this before, and I'm a Michigan State alumnus. I can say this. A degree from Michigan State University just isn't worth what a degree from the University of Michigan is. That's just a fact.
Let me just give you one example, and this is one out of a billion probably. My granddaughter, who graduated third or fourth in her class, by the way.
Michigan State? Don't be making stuff up.
I'm not making stuff up. I'll show you the book. She graduates out of Michigan State, and she gets a job offer from the guy that owns the Washington Post.
Bezos. Amazon.
She gets a job offer from Bezos. They move her to California and start her off at a salary. This is a 21-year-old girl. Start her off at a salary of $77,000 to run a division for them because of what she took at Michigan State.
Don't tell me they don't do well there.
They do very well there.
Enough.
By the way, Eli, I got something else I want to add to what Denny said. He's talking about mowing his lawn and it's all green and green and stuff like that. It's not anymore, Denny. You're right, it was. You know what it is now? Now it's fluorescent green and black. Fight for the only colors, fluorescent green and black. The outfits that the Michigan State basketball team wore the other night in their latest embarrassing loss. It was outrageous. It was outrageous. What are they thinking? But, of course, so many teams in sports do the same thing.
But, Bob, it's in case the lights go out in the arena, they glow in the dark. That fluorescent
Pistons' gray uniforms, the Pistons' black uniforms. They're trying to sell more.
They're trying to do is sell merchandise, whether it's socks, jocks, whatever the hell it is. But they're trying to find something unique that their fans will buy.
Back to the Michigan recruiting, just to finish up. Yes, they did poorly in state. However, nationally, by 247 Sports, Michigan is 8th. Just Big Ten, 8th nationally, Penn State 13, Ohio State 14, Nebraska 20, Wisconsin 27, and MSU 30. So, yes, they must be recruiting better from out of state, and that's the way it always has been in college sports, ever since Anthony Carter. Why would he want to leave Riviera Beach, Florida, to go to Michigan and play for a running attack?
I couldn't imagine. Let me ask you a question. It sounds so exotic, doesn't it? Have you ever actually been to Riviera Beach?
No.
It's 20 minutes out, Michael.
I hear it's not.
It's a teeming ghetto is essentially what Riviera Beach is. There are a few nice areas, but it's a ghetto. That's why he would want to leave. And do you really think that Anthony Carter had a right academically to matriculate at the August University of Michigan? You wonder why Anthony Carter went there? How did his parents keep getting up to the Michigan games in Ann Arbor to see him all the time? Come on. That's the way it is.
Well, they must have had good money to charter a jet.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. I wonder where that money came from.
A couple little topics here to finish
and I got,
up.
I got one before you move on.
I got another one before you move on, too.
Before I move on, you move on. Go ahead, Danny.
And I'm
going to
move on first. We're talking about pitchers for just a second. They were talking about
You're changing it to baseball. I want to pick up on what Eli was saying about recruiting. One second, then we get back to baseball.
All right, go ahead.
The thing about recruiting, I would never say recruiting is overrated. But so many times when they have these player rankings out of high school, these kids don't pan out. Well, you got a guy like Mark D'Antonio who goes down to Columbus, and finds a kid Ohio State didn't want, a two-star running back named Le'Veon Bell. He goes all over Ohio and finds these great players, and they coach them and turn them into stars at Michigan State. Kirk Cousins, two stars out of West Michigan. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So don't put too much stock in this recruiting stuff.
I think that really came to light during the Brady Hoke era when he got all those five-star recruits and D'Antonio kicked his butt every year because he can coach up the two- and three-star guys. I agree with that.
One of the greatest things – I'm not going to get to the baseball maybe today, but one of the greatest things I've ever seen is Kirk Cousins to go from MSU, where he was okay. I don't think he was a star, but he was a more than adequate quarterback, and go into the NFL and wind up with a contract for $100 million. I think only in America, $100 million, and 80 of it was guaranteed in the beginning. Unbelievable.
And they're not happy about that in Minnesota.
Oh,
either,
they're not happy about that anyway. Let me just go where I'm going to go. One second. Just give me one second.
I just wanted to mention Kenny Willekes, by the way, walk on at Michigan State, unrecruited by anybody, first team All Big Ten and an All American defensive lineman. Yeah. Go ahead.
Is that an amen? Is that an amen?
No, I said go ahead.
Okay. Not go ahead.
Yeah, I'm so, not a religious person.
You know, 50 years ago, they called 68 the year of the pitcher. This year, in the year 2018, there were more strikeouts than hits for the first time in Major League history. Think about that. More strikeouts than hits. Why? I'll tell you why, because the hitters are horrible. I mean, we got bad hitters. You just go back and look at any tape of any game, and you'll have a dozen players swinging at a ball 6-8 inches, either outside or 4-6 inches above their head. It's like an epidemic in both leagues.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I believe a lot's got to do with the analytics that prove that getting the ball in the air is much more likely to produce runs than hitting a ground ball.
You think they're doing this because they're trying to hit a home run?
They're trying to hit home runs. It's launch angles. It's what it is. It's launch angles.
You got to put the ball in the bat to launch anything. These guys are swinging.
May I quote one of your greatest friends in life, Ted Williams, who once said, singles hitters drive Fords, home run hitters drive Cadillacs. That's what it's about.
But right? No, see, that's when Ted played and they were making $7,500 a year. To play this year, the minimum salary is $530,000 a year. They're driving Cadillacs now also. I think at $530,000, you can buy a Cadillac.
The reason that there are more strikeouts is because there's more emphasis in hitting home runs. I don't think
that's not true. It's just not true. The hitting is bad. I'm telling
you.
Why
do hitters get worse
because
with all the advantages
the
they have?
The talent of the player has gone downhill. It has absolutely gone downhill. Honest to God, look at every ball club and find out how many guys. And listen, these guys are supposed to be hitting home run. They aren't. And look at their batting averages. Just look at their batting averages. We'll do that next week. But here, listen to me.
You sound like Jerry Green trying to tell us that Johnny Unitas is better than Tom Brady.
Give me a break. That's what they say.
Hitters today are just as good. Mike Trout, these guys, they're just as good as anybody.
Everybody's just as good in their own era.
They're facing a different pitcher every time up. They're facing pitchers that go in there with max effort for two innings at 100 miles an hour. Let me finish. The Tampa Bay Rays started with a reliever, I forget his name now, who started about 20 games and only pitched the first inning.
Right.
So the hitters, the science of the game and the science of pitching and using pitchers, of defensive alignments, of shifts, of all the things that cut down batting averages. So I think my feeling is they're just as good. They're just changing their priorities of how to hit and how far to hit the ball and long ball over short.
The only
ball.
Difference
and Danny,
between
and Danny, I submit
oh
to you
God,
that in his
Lord,
prime a few me. Years ago, it's arguable, obviously, the greatest hitter who's ever lived, the greatest hitter I ever saw, the greatest hitter Kaline says he ever saw, Miguel Cabrera.
That's PR. That's PR. You don't have enough good pitchers to get the ball inside. He wouldn't hit 300, for God's sakes, if you get the ball inside to him. They have a great article in the Sporting News this week, and not Sporting News, but online, about the toughest pitchers in Major League Baseball to hit. I'll just name a couple of them. The ones that I know are really tough. Chris Sale, because he's 13 feet tall and he comes sidearm.
He is a good pitcher. He's a very good pitcher.
He used to be a very good pitcher. And then you've got Max Scherzer. Max Scherzer, who is
just a very good pitcher.
Very, very nasty. And then he got a whole bunch of other guys, Jacob deGrom and Josh Hader and Jordan Hicks and some of the other guys, Corey Kluber, who's got a great curveball.
Noah Syndergaard. I mean, there's so many great pitchers out there now.
Why are you listing great pitchers?
But the pitchers have overtaken the game again. Obviously, that's what they're making all these rules changes for. They want to move the mound back. They want to reduce the mound. But my point is,
Gibson took over the game in 1968.
That's what I'm getting to right there and then.
Get to the point.
What I'm getting to is two or three of the nastiest guys I ever saw when I played, and people will remember these names, was a guy by the name of Lolich. And Lolich had this trick. If you ever stole a base on him, he'd throw at your knees the next time you came over. So a guy named Tovar with the Minnesota Twins.
Cesar Tovar.
He could dance, too. And lo and behold, he got to third base. He led off the ball game. He walked. Mickey missed him. Tried to hit him three times in a row, leading off the game. And Mickey missed him. He stole second base, stole third base. And then Lolitz turned to him at third base and says, "I dare you, you little SOB, to try to steal home." The next pitch, he stole home. And, I mean, stole it and was cleanly.
What did Lolitz do the next time he came up then? Did he try to hit him in the
hit
knees?
Hit him right in the ass. Hit him
well,
right.
You know what?
Right,
I'll tell you what. And what started in your era and Lolich's era, what you're talking about, is guys charging the mound. And once guys said,
"I've
had enough of this stuff, you're not going to take my livelihood away," they're charging the mound with their bats.
And they did.
Stopped that Mickey Lolich stuff from going on.
And they did. Well, and the other guy who used to do that a lot was Gibson. But Gibson wouldn't, contrary to what people think, Bob never hit anybody. I mean, I knocked a lot of guys down. So did Gibson. But we never hit anybody. Keeping the ball inside is your best weapon to get anybody out to begin with, because nobody can handle a good fastball inside. But Gibson, I mean, he just looked notorious out there, besides gruff and going to knock you down anytime.
And you both actually hit a lot of people. What you're saying is you didn't deliberately try
not
to deliberately, throw
right.
Head.
Absolutely
well,
not.
Can we move 50 years ahead from 1960? It was a big year for me, too.
Well, what I'm just trying to tell you is I was reading the article, and I saw a lot of things that were the same then as they are now.
Well, barring them moving the mound back to 70 feet, I thought the cutest story.
They're not talking 70 feet. They're talking a foot, foot and a half.
Whatever you say, the cutest story of the week
is,
I got a better one.
Smoking.
Okay, I'll do this. We have about 3 minutes. I'm going to do this one in basically a minute and a half. The cutest story of the week.
Is the marijuana legal in Naples?
It doesn't matter. I don't rely on that.
It's never mattered to him then.
No, it doesn't make any difference. I can go anywhere. I can go. I know Big Ted down at the joint. You know, I get
now. Now I got it. Now I got to check my timer. The cutest story of the week is you can't bet on the length of the national anthem at sports books.
Isn't
I don't know if you saw this or not.
Yeah, I did.
But the Caribbean's got all the offline betting that spies had said that in rehearsal. Gladys Knight's anthem had lasted 149, 150, and 153. And so the over and under was big bets were coming in on the over. So they realized the bookies offshore realized that obviously rumors were going around, and they changed the odds. So you'd have to bet 300 now, which is plus 300 to win on the anthem. So it turns out there was still controversy. She went over 2 minutes, but she sung "Home of the Brave" twice at the end.
Yeah, she did.
They didn't have to pay off on the first "Home of the Brave" or the one that she added, and they just some paid off on both and not. But as far as the betting goes,
That's a good story, but I got a better one.
Go ahead.
That comes from the Lakers San Antonio game on national TV Saturday night. During the course of the second half, Van Gundy turns to Mark Jackson and says, "This is going well. They're playing mother-in-law defense now." Mark Jackson looks at him and says, "What does that mean, mother-in-law defense?" Van Gundy says, "Constant pressure and harassment." But you know what? that could extend to wives and girlfriends too, can't it? Constant
Except with mothers-in-law, it could just be a nasty look. It doesn't have to be something they say. There are really ways to harass without even opening your mouth.
Bob, can I ask you a personal question? Do
yes,
you
sir.
Ever leave the condo that you have down there? Do you ever leave it?
Besides
whatever it is. Whatever it is, do you ever leave it? I mean, it seems like you watch every football, basketball, hockey,
he watches them all night
ping
long.
Pong. Really?
Do you know what? I can say this on the radio.
Sure, you can, but easy.
This is not the radio.
Why does a dog lick his balls? Because he can. Why do I watch all these games? Because I'm a retired old man in Florida, and I can. I don't do any business. I'm tired. You guys just
all
don't.
Right.
The closer you get to the camera, the more you look like the Odd Couple. What was his name? Walter Matthau.
Gentlemen, a lot of fun.
And you know what, Eli?
We'll
didn't think about
Monday.
That. You keep your nose away from the camera.
It's a wide-angle lens. Doesn't tell
the
me
the guy
any
who really
good.
Wanted to keep his nose away from the camera is Eli Zerrett, not me.
All right. This has been No Filter Sports. We'll see you again next time.
Obviously, have a good one, guys. Bye-bye.